Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Stevie Nichol. Later on in the show, Alessandro Del Piero and Nicky Bandini will be here as we'll be looking to see how Juventus look ahead at the start of the new Serie A season. But we kick things off with England booking a place in the Euro 2022 final, thrashing Sweden. For more on this, let's go to Kay and the crew.
Thanks, Dan. 4-0 for the Lionesses. Serena Wiegmann still coaching them after the game, and what a tournament it has been for her and her England side so far. There is that final coming up at Wembley on Sunday, though, but they are soaking in the moment so far. And it turns out we've got a German in the studio with us who's an England fan, until tomorrow at least.
Yes, I am.
What do you like about them, Steffi?
Well, they just, from the first game on, performing forward, fresh, young, and I love them.
It wasn't so easy to be an England fan watching the opening minutes of this game against Sweden, because when Sweden came out in it, they absolutely meant business from the first minute. And we can take a look back now as we go over the highlight to bring that to you, just how strong the Swedes came out. First minute, Sofia Jakobsen, who hadn't played a minute in this tournament, testing Mary Earps.
Well, early on, the Swedes were looking to get behind Lucy Bronze, but unable to capitalize and put the ball away.
And then Lucy Bronze was the ball played in for this goal from Beth Mead.
What a nice turn. And I mean, that's just what I said, young and fresh, and she just takes it out of the back.
Great way to win in the golden boot as well. Started the second half, Lucy Bronze got on the board.
Well, and she's playing provider on that first goal and then just finishes. How about that technique? Back where it came from, headed down, and it sneaks inside that far post.
But the Lionesses doing their job at both ends of the pitch. Blackstenius would get a chance here, but Mary Earps was level to it.
Yeah, and it's a great save, and it shows that this might be relevant when they play in the final.
And then, I mean, the moment of the match, you'd have to say, Alessia Russo hadn't even been on the pitch long and did this.
I have three words. Are you kidding me? Wait, that's four.
That's four. You can have them. It's a four-goal game. We can take that today. But seriously, she'd come on. She'd almost set up a goal for Lauren Hem. And then she did this. We'll get back to that in just a moment, though. 76th minute. A player who probably deserved this goal as well from the performance we saw from her today, Fran Kirby.
Yeah, and it's a bummer for Lindahl, I would say. She had some sad moments, and that's just, not so nice for her.
Great.
But from Kirby, it was great.
We've been teaching Steffi all the very important
things. Yeah, bummer.
Studio. Yep, many more still to come. Stick with us here on Women's Euro coverage. NDS tomorrow, we'll have a lot more of it for you. Germany against France, the other semi-final, to find out who will be facing England at Wembley on Sunday. All right, let's talk about what we saw in this game from the Lionesses. I do want to start with Alessia Russo, though, because I just want to go back to that goal. It had the whole of football talking, what she did, and what she did in a semi-final as well at such a young age, Danielle.
It's just audacious to even try it, to attempt it, and then to have it cross the goal line is just such a special moment. I think sometimes when you're a sub, when you're a young player, when you're not thinking too much about the pressure in the moment, you try things like this, and credit goes to Alessia Russo, because that one sealed the deal for England.
Serena Wiegmann has not changed her lineup all through the tournament so far. She didn't today, and many are wondering if she were to change it, if it would be Alessia Russo coming in for Ellen White. Anyway, Sam Kerr liked that goal. She said, not going to lie, that was lit from Russo. But you don't expect or anticipate there will be any changes for the final.
I don't think so, but I liked very much that you were saying that it could be. I mean, she's a good sub. She comes in and she just, how you say,
she plays free. She plays changes
free
the game.
And she changes the game. And she's young. So, Danielle, what did you say?
Well, we just talked about the fact that now she might not be a starter heading into this game on Sunday, but looking ahead toward the World Cup, you've got to think she's not only knocking on the door, but she's kicking it down. She's starting number nine for England.
Look what I can do. Yeah, she's had quite the tournament so far. In fact, the Lionesses have, but there is still another hurdle if they are to make it to the trophy. And we'll find out who they will be facing in that final, because Germany and France will go head-to-head in Milton Keynes tomorrow. And that's going to be quite an interesting game as well. There's a bit of news going into that too, because there's a big player missing. But we'll tell you all about that tomorrow. For now, though, Dan, it's back to you.
Thank you very much, Kay. What a result for the English. Plenty of contenders for player of the match. In the end, it was awarded to Beth Mead, who caught up with Alexis Nunes after the game.
Beth, congratulations on making it to the final. I mean, if you look at the headlines now, they're saying England cruise to the final. I know you'd say otherwise, knowing how much of a formidable rival Sweden has been, but are you a little surprised with how much you were able to dominate that scoreline?
A little bit. I think, Sweden started the game really well. They had some big chances, and credit to Mary, she made some big saves at crucial moments for us. But, you know, we've got great quality in this team, and, you know, we've played against some good teams and made them look average sometimes, and that's credit to the girls in our squad and the way we've been playing. So, yeah, Sweden have been a great side, but, yeah, we had too much for them tonight.
And, I mean, the way the team has been playing has been amazing. The way you've been playing, honestly, scintillating. What are you having for breakfast? You know, do you feel like you're in the best form of your life so far?
I'd say so. I think I've come off a good season. It's given me a lot of confidence, and I'll keep saying it, but in my football, I'm just enjoying being out there, and I think sometimes that's the main part of playing well. I'm proud to be playing for this team and playing for my country, and yeah, really enjoying just being here.
And finally, I mean, I know it's a tough one to choose, but when you're in this destructive form, knowing that you have the entire support of a nation behind you, Germany or France, who would you like to take a crack at?
I mean, a Germany-England final sounds pretty good, but both teams are very, very good, and we'll be watching that game closely tomorrow night.
Beth, congratulations again.
Thank you.
Let's get more reaction now, shall we, to England booking a place in the final. Alexis and Mark are outside Bramall Lane.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jan. A quite cold and a bit wet Bramall Lane, but nothing is stopping the parade after that performance against Sweden from England. Augie, you heard from Beth Mead right there, and I did have to ask her, because even going into this match, knowing the record historically Sweden have, they've played them 26 times, they've won 15 times, England have only won 3 times. So I even asked Emma Hayes, and Emma says, I don't think England are favourites. I think it's 50-50. And I said, I don't know. This England team is in scintillating form. So are you surprised with how England were able to dominate that scoreline?
I think they dominated after the first half an hour. I think the opening half hour was very tight. I think obviously Sweden had chances in the first 10 minutes to score that 20 seconds Mary Earps had to make a save. So I think, you know, Sweden had this record, but I never felt for 1 minute that Sweden were the favourites in this game. I felt that England had been so impressive in the tournament that even though Sweden ranked second in the world behind just the US, who are obviously the best team in the world, that it never really felt in doubt. And as soon as England scored the opening goal, Sweden just blew away. I just thought it was there for England to win well, and they did.
And one of the things that has impressed about England so far, yes, the amount of goals that they have scored. It's no secret that they score a lot of goals under Serena Wiegman. You know, they already had a record before the Euros even started, and they have been scoring the most amount of goals in the group stages as well. But they have so many different people scoring the goals. But of all the goal scorers you've seen so far, who's truly impressed you, and why is it Alessia Russo?
Well, I mean, that goal she scored, that was such a wow moment. I think that was a moment of the tournament. That's going to go viral because, you know, not only the tournament, but just it'll cut through people that even don't like football. That'll be shown everywhere. And the good thing about it is there'll be girls, there'll be boys tomorrow. They'll be going to the playing fields and trying to do what Alessia Russo did. Not what Lionel Messi did or Cristiano Ronaldo, what Alessia Russo did. And that is such a big thing for the game. You know, the tournament has been huge, but that for me, Alessia Russo has become a household name by that moment of audacity tonight. Now, and she's been a star of the tournament, but there have been so many. You know, we saw, you know, Georgia Stanway's goal last week, you know, Frank Kirby's goal today, this chip. They've been fantastic goals, and they've really caught the imagination of the nation. But yeah, Alessia Russo is impressive because she comes off the bench and does it time after time.
And I mean, we didn't get to speak to her in the flash, but she was hanging around us in the flash area, and I did have to tell her that we do like to use the word filth a lot on ESPN FC, and I just said that goal was filthy. And she said, you know what, I missed a sitter earlier on and I knew I had to do something to make up for it, and that's exactly what she did. But the thing is, that's no surprise, she's been doing that so much coming off of the bench, which is why a lot of people, as much as they love Ellen White, and I keep saying that she just needs one more goal to tie Wayne Rooney's record and two to just beat it and become England's most prolific scorer. But this is why everyone kind of wants her to start. It is the final. We know Serena Wiegman doesn't like changing her squad, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But has Alessia Russo made a good case?
Oh, she made a great case, but, you know, there is a value to be an impact sub, and an impact sub is a big thing, especially at a major tournament. So I can see the argument to start her, but she's a different player to Ellen White, a totally different player.
Yeah.
Now, you could say that Ellen White spends an hour, 65 minutes doing that job that nobody wants to do, that, you know, wearing the opposition down. It's a really, it's an unselfish job, but it's a job that, you know, you have to be a certain type of player to do it, and that isn't Alessia Russo's role. So Ellen White plays a massive role for the team by doing that, softening up the opposition to create the gaps for Alessia Russo to come on and, you know, steal the show as she did today. And the best part about that goal, not the back heel, it went through the goalkeeper's legs.
It went through her legs.
Everything about it was just fantastic. So, you know, but I think on Sunday Ellen White should start.
Well, I suppose look ahead a little bit to Sunday, because again, when I spoke to Beth Mead, I had to ask her, would she rather France or Germany? And I love that she actually answered it. You know, everyone likes to say we'll take whoever, we respect both teams, but a Germany-England final for all of the popcorn. Yeah. I mean, that's what the country wants to see, right?
Well, I mean, Germany, the most successful team in this tournament by such a long way. I mean, 8 times winners. I mean, England-France has got a lot of kind of resonance to it as well. It's, yeah, you know, neighbours, but England-Germany, it is the box office ticket, isn't it? It's the game that everybody wants to see, no matter what the sport is, no matter what, if it's men's, women's, England v Germany, sell out Wembley. What more can you ask?
But with that said, I know you've heard me talking a lot about Germany as well, and I still think Germany, as much as what England has done, I think that even in the group stages, Germany came up against a lot tougher opposition that tested them more so than England. England now have had some serious tests in these knockout rounds, but I still think even Spain provided more of a test than we saw from Sweden tonight. But Germany, just from whether it's going forward, whether it's defending, they just look like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, I don't think these fans want to hear Germany, but I think it's all about England. But I think the thing with Germany is they have seemed to play within themselves a little bit. We saw them play Austria last week at Brentford, and they weren't overly impressive, but they got the job done easily. So that is a danger for France tomorrow and for England if they play in the final. We can't write France off, because France are a very good team, but I think it's almost like fate is now pointing to an England-Germany final, isn't it? And it's just, you know, England-Germany at Wembley in a major final. That's it, isn't it?
Well, we'll see what happens with that one. But one of the things as well, when I spoke to Lucy Bronze before the tournament even started, she did give a hint, because I asked what would be the secret or not so secret weapon about this current England setup, and she actually said the depth of squad that they have. Are we finally seeing how that really and truly is the main reason that we're seeing these dominating performances from them?
Well, it's made the difference in the two knockout games against Spain last week and against Sweden tonight. The bench, the change of the subs has made the difference. It's freshened the team up, it's changed the way they've played. So that depth has been the key. So she's right. It is. It's not just about the 11 on the team. It's about the full squad.
All right. Well, the fans are singing right beside us right now that football's coming home again, because so is the belief here. I know we heard it last year and everyone's kind of trying not to utter it too loud, but I think with the way that the Lionesses have been flying and roaring through this tournament, it just might. Dan?
Alexis, as always, thank you very much. So it's all about who will face England then in Sunday's final. Will it be Germany or will it be France?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
For the first time in this pre-season, Cristiano Ronaldo went to training on Tuesday, of course, after missing the pre-season tour. He is returned to Manchester United. A lot of speculation about his future remains, however. Mark Ogden's still with us. He's joined by Gemma Soler, and Alessandro Del Piero joins us as well. Mark, let's start with you. What's the latest?
Well, the latest is that, as we know, Ronaldo's back. He met Erik ten Hag at Carrington today, but his future remains unresolved. You know, he wants to go, and United are saying right now they want him to stay. But I think the reality behind the scenes is that if United can find somebody to take him, either on loan or permanently, they'll let him go because, you know, United have started to build for the future under ten Hag. The pre-season was relatively successful, albeit pre-season. You know, Anthony Martial scoring goals again, Marcus Rashford looked good. Does he really want to change all that by putting Ronaldo back into the picture? Not really, because Ronaldo doesn't want to be there. But right now, they haven't found a buyer or a club to take him on loan because he earns over £500,000 a week and he's got a year left on his contract.
Gemma, obviously in Spain, we heard this story come out that Atletico Madrid were really interested to bring him in. However, Enrique Cerezo, the Atleti president, has come out and said, we have no idea where this story has come from. It's simply not true.
Yes, Dan, I think it's extremely difficult that this finally happened. Of course, even though there were conversations, inside conversations, Cerezo publicly, he would have to say, to deny that, because the fans, the brave Atletico fans, they would not be, at the very beginning, very keen with Cristiano Ronaldo, the beast of their bitter rivals, Real Madrid, joining their team, at least at the beginning. And also, we know Atletico are in a difficult financial situation. They are not big spenders, so it looks like a very difficult operation to sign this rival, this 38-year striker. And Cerezo made sure that there was no rumor surrounding this Cristiano joining Atletico. Before that, we also heard the rumor that he could be playing back, he could be going back to Real Madrid, but as far as we know, there was not such a meeting, a one-to-one meeting with Cristiano Ronaldo and President Florentino Perez himself. It's true that now, after what happened, the bad relationship after his departure, there is a good relationship now. His elder son is playing for the Fundación Real Madrid, but there's no such a possibility. There will be no more signings that Tchouaméni and Rudiger for Real Madrid. So it's extremely unlikely that, unfortunately, that Cristiano Ronaldo will go back to La Liga, Dan.
Mark, didn't you call this a few weeks ago, Real Madrid?
I did, and I think what we're seeing at the minute is it looks like the playbook that Ronaldo and George Mendes' agent used last year. That, you know, he went very close to signing for Man City. Man United got spooked by it. It was almost like, oh no, we can't have Ronaldo going to our biggest rivals. And it's the same game being played. You know, Real are sitting there hearing that he might go to Atletico, and it sounds like Atletico have called it out. But I do think that Real is still an option in the sense that they always find the money, and they do need somebody to, you know, to back up Benzema. Now, I'm not sure Ronaldo would want to back up anybody, but if you said to him, look, you can go back to Madrid, to Real Madrid, you know, he'd do it. I think the other options on the table aren't great because there are no options. And the thing with Ronaldo is, this is really about Ronaldo. It's a self-serving situation for Ronaldo. He just wants to extend his record in the Champions League, his goals, his appearances. That's all it's about. So if he gets two or three more goals next year in the Champions League for anybody, it might make his record uncatchable for anybody. And that's what it's all about. So if he can find a club in the Champions League, he will go there. Real Madrid are the Champions League, you know, winners, the holders. He'd love to go back to Real Madrid. Even he'd take a pay cut, but whether Real want to do it. But if Ronaldo takes a pay cut and he's prepared to, you know, sit on the bench for more often than he used to do, then it might work out because we know that Florentino Perez loves a big signing, and, you know, bringing Ronaldo home, it's got an appeal to it, hasn't it? He could finish his career at Real Madrid. Fantastic.
Alessandro, do you understand this mentality from Ronaldo that he doesn't want to play in the Europa League? He wants to play in the Champions League because, as Mark said, he wants to extend this goal-scoring record that he has.
Well, of course I understand because, you know, Champions League football is the best that you can have in the world. Actually, you know, every team is fantastic. So you're going to play like a mini World Cup at the end of the day. So mini Euro Cup, better. But for him, it's not only records that he's looking for. It's prestige, you know, stay in the top club and clubs and stay with the people that, you know, it counts. let's say like this, in his opinion, and he's gonna look forward for that for sure. Every single moment till the last possibility to move somewhere.
Alessandro, are you surprised that there isn't more interest in him from other clubs?
I'm not surprised. This is the real question, exactly. This is a real topic, you know, that some of the team doesn't feel that they want him. There's different reasons, money, of course, and the fact that he's moving a lot when Cristiano comes. And I remember when he comes to Juve, he's moving a lot around him. And also the other players, you can bring up most of the players, but in the front line, you can also bring down these players, some of these players, because you're not going to play a lot of minutes in order to play a game. So Cristiano is going to make shadow in all the other strikers. So now the teams are built with, you know, 5-6 players in front line, and everybody wants their piece of fame and piece of play inside the team. So I'm not surprised that this is a situation, because every club wants to move to the future. And you know, Cristiano is 38 now. Can play, yes, good, yes, for maybe a couple of more years, but it's a question mark for the future. So they prefer to move to young players and build with them.
So Stevie, we've talked about Real Madrid not having a real backup to Karim Benzema.
To me, if I'm Cristiano Ronaldo, it makes complete sense to somehow get yourself back to Real Madrid. Because
can he play second fiddle? That's the thing, isn't it?
Well, it's in his hands.
Right.
If the one thing that's in his head is playing Champions League in order to get his goals tally up, his appearance tally up, then he's going to have to figure out how to do it. And the only way that happens is if he doesn't get his $500,000 a week, whatever it is. And he understands that he's going to sacrifice the money and a bit of ego,
right,
to ultimately do what he wants to do. Now, in 10 years' time, when he's completely finished, if he decides that his ego's too big and he ends up staying at United, in 10 years' time, he might sit back and go, you know what, why didn't I don't just bite the bullet, let my ego down a little bit, going back to Real Madrid and played another couple of seasons. He could maybe play for the next two seasons if he plays 20, 25 games a season. And then his goals tally will be absolutely untouchable. So this is all down to him. If he can see the big picture, and that seems to be the big picture for him, it's in his hands to make it happen.
Alessandro, the big word, though, that Stevie used there is ego, isn't it? Can Cristiano Ronaldo, who has been one of the best in the world, it's all about Ronaldo wherever he's been, be that humble, be that person who can sit on the bench and then can come
Cristiano
on and replace Benzema?
Everything. You want to play every game. You want to play 90 minutes. And there's no other option for him. We remember last year when Ragnik took him out of the pitch a couple of times, consecutive times, and big glamour happened from him and from other players, from the press and from everybody. So the thing is, you need to start thinking what you can do in order to achieve even more records and more goals.
What if he stays at United, Mark?
Well, I mean, what have we got? 5-6 weeks of the window left. I think it's more likely that he does. But if he stays at United, he's going to have to accept that he can't be playing every week. And I think Ten Hag has to plan for the future because, I wouldn't want to rely on Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford to score the goals. I think they've let United down often enough now. But they are young, they are the future. And Ronaldo's going to have to accept that he can't play every week, and United have to plan for the future, so it's going to be difficult for him. I think it suits everybody at United for him to go, for Ronaldo to go, for Ten Hag, for the club. They will find a way. The clubs always find a way. It's very rare that a player stays when he's not wanted and a club keep a player that doesn't want to. They're paying him so much money, it makes no sense for United to keep him. So I think they will find a way. There'll be a club that emerges, but we're not even in August yet, and that's the thing. I think by the time we get to the end of August, then that's when people start panicking. They need a goal scorer, and United need to clear the wage bill. So I think he will move.
Gemma, do you think the Real Madrid players would want him back?
Yeah, I'm sure. Fans, for sure. It's the biggest hero, the maximum scored in Real Madrid history, and the players too. I mean, even Karim Benzema, that they could be maybe not competing because they show they had such a good understanding when they played together, and he's a player that even though about you were talking about the ego or his personality, he was such a team player and an important player for Real Madrid history. So I'm sure, I mean, good players, they always want to play with the best players, but it will have to be with an attitude. He will have to adapt so much to the condition. And Real Madrid are playing their cards, saying, no, we already made all the signings. And President Florentino Perez, he can put a name there, Sergio Ramos. There is no such a big legend like Sergio Ramos. And Florentino Perez, his hand didn't shake to kick him out when he didn't want to accept absolutely all the conditions he needed for the club. It would be the same with Cristiano Ronaldo. It will be not easy for him to negotiate. He will have to take a big pay cut and to adapt to the conditions and to adapt to Carlo Ancelotti's idea. And if he accepts that, being on the bench and being a second unity player and adapting and playing for the team, not playing for his records and for himself, we could be talking about a possibility, but as far as we know, he's not that close. The day of today, I mean, they were not looking for a player like him, but if there is a big opportunity that can guarantee some goals and a top striker that can play and put quality in the final third, we could be talking about a very famous comeback.
It's going to be interesting to see how things play out. Of course, we're just, under 2 weeks away from the season starting. The curtain raiser in England will see Liverpool take on Manchester City in the Community Shield, which is live on Saturday on ESPN+. Our coverage starts at 11:30 Eastern.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Paul Pogba's second spell at Juventus has not started well. He will miss the opener against Sassuolo with a knee injury. Pogba stopped just a couple of the headlines in Italy. Mark's with us, Alessandro. We also welcome Nicky Bandini to the show. Nicky, this obviously isn't what Juventus had planned.
No, absolutely not. After all the enthusiasm of the summer, after Pogba back, and after, you know, the excitement, frankly, that he'd got through his medical, because he did have some calf issues and some hamstring issues during his time at Manchester United. There was such an optimism around it. There was so much excitement about Pogba being there and what it was going to mean for a Juventus team that, let's be explicit about it, has very much got its sights set on reclaiming the Serie A title this season. So this is a meniscus tear. Meniscus tear is likely to set a player back 6 to 8 weeks, which means he's going to miss the start of the season. It's a big blow, and it's a big blow for a player who Gubb has made, even though there wasn't a transfer fee, a significant outlay on paying sort of between, 8 million euros, what he's getting a year, and then 10 to 11 million euros a year on the balance sheet, it's a big loss.
And for Juventus fans, Alessandro, we're so excited about Pogba coming back, bringing new energy, much needed energy to that midfield. It kind of deflates everyone, and the season hasn't even started yet.
Yes, unfortunately, this is the big news. And I believe it's not a big disaster, you know, for Juve, for Pogba, because it's some kind of injury that is going to heal very well. But the fact that he's going to miss all the preseason and the first games, that's going to be something, you know, that, of course, putting down the enthusiasm around the team. But again, Juve acquired also other players, most of them, you know, the big one is Di Maria, so the start of the season is going to be huge. What really concerns me is the how he got injured, because it was during the warm-up and the training, and is very unusual movement, so that's the only thing that concerned about this his muscle structure.
This is a feeling, obviously, Manchester United fans are, well aware of, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, Pogba's been an unfortunate player, hasn't he? He's had a lot of injuries over the years. A lot of, you know, not really his fault, but, you know, muscle strains, knee strains that have taken a while to overcome. And I think, you know, if I was Juventus, I'd be concerned that this is the first half of the season gone, because, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, well, that takes into pretty much October. Then you've got the World Cup a month later. So you're telling me that Pogba's going to be not distracted by the World Cup? He's going to be desperate to go to the World Cup. So if I'm Juventus, I'm thinking, well, is he going to be focused on our situation, or is he focusing on France? And then you've got, you know, back in December. I mean, I think United will be really happy that he's out of the building, because this was what was happening with Pogba all the time. So it's somebody else's problem now, and I think Juventus can forget about him until the new year.
Always this drama, it seems, surrounding Juventus before even a ball is being kicked, Nicky. Rabiot, what's the latest on him?
Well, I mean, this is a big question now, is does Pogba's absence create more opportunities for Rabiot in the side? It was already uncertain what that midfield was going to look like, and we're seeing this in pre-season, which is just getting started really for Juventus, the experimentation for Max Allegri, exactly what his attack's going to look like as well in front of the midfield, because he is talking about something more attacking with Di Maria coming into the side, with Vlahovic, with Chiesa. And now, does Pogba being out just create opportunities for Rabiot, who was being talked about as someone who are looking to move on? There were certainly transfer options explored earlier this summer. I think he's going to still be at Juventus at the start of the season. I think he's going to very possibly find some more games as a result of this injury.
Alessandro, you look at it and you look at someone like Rabiot. Has he got the quality that Juventus need if they're going to push and win the title this season?
Well, we know that after last season, the big problem for Juventus was definitely the midfielders and what happened in the middle of the field. This is the best, the worst situation for them, you know, missing the best players and the one that you believe is going to rebuild that strain in the middle of the field. So Rabiot could be an option, of course, but definitely they have to be in certain situation, you know, you need to, every absence that you're going to have, you have to find a way to overcome. Otherwise, you cannot miss, you know, everything because of one player. That's the thing.
Nicky, everyone seems to be linked with Juventus for one reason or another at the moment. We see Memphis Depay, obviously Barcelona looking to offload players at the moment, is the latest. Do you think there's actually any interest from Juve?
I think Depay is not the hottest of the leads that's going on for Juventus at the moment. But certainly they are still looking for options to reinforce up front. And in particular, I think Allegri would really like to add one wide attacker to the collection he's got at the moment. It's been really interesting listening to him this preseason. He's really talked about, look, the problem for us last year was not avoiding conceding goals, it was that we weren't scoring goals. He's acknowledging what I think every Juventus fan and every steady app watcher knows too well, which is that Juventus were quite dull last season and didn't always know how to break teams down. So they are looking at options going forward. Depay is certainly an interesting one because he has only got 1 year left in his contract, and it does seem like Barcelona are willing to talk about a reduced fee to make something happen. But I don't think at the moment that's the hottest lead with Juventus. I think Timo Werner is definitely of interest to Juventus, and that was already discussed a bit with Chelsea when there was talk of De Ligt going to Chelsea. There was conversations about potential exchange. Obviously, that's off the table, but the Werner conversation has already begun in some degree. And also, Juventus are, frankly, still not necessarily done with Alvaro Morata. I think if you're looking for a player who Allegri likes, who the club would like to bring back if they could find the right fee, which they weren't able to do when the player was still there and they had the sort of buyback option, I think that's not off the table either. But certainly they're looking for options up front, and Depay would fit the brief if they ended up turning that way.
Alessandra, who are you choosing? Memphis Depay or Timo Werner?
Well, for the way that Allegri loves to play, he definitely loves to play like a Timo Werner, because, you know, he runs a lot, he can cover different positions, it could be any position in the front. And Depay is a little bit different in that situation, maybe more quality inside the goal area, and, you know, it's better on scoring goals from my point of view, potentially. But I don't know which one of the two want to stay in the bench at the Juve. That's the bigger question mark at the end of the day.
What's interesting, of course, is these quotes that came out from Timo Werner, asked if he was happy at Chelsea, and he said he could be happy anywhere. Thomas Tuchel not happy about what he had to say to the press. Thomas Tuchel coming out and responding and saying, you know, he should be very happy. He's very fortunate to be here at Chelsea. I'd be very happy as a young guy having a contract at Chelsea Football Club. I'd be one of the happiest people on the planet. So he needs to get his game time, show quality, take your place and defend your place. I'd be one of the happiest people on the planet having a contract with Chelsea. If he said this, I do not understand.
He's an angry man, isn't he, right now?
Thomas Tuchel?
Aye.
Takes one to know one.
It seems like everything that anybody does or says right now is getting up his nose.
Right.
He's looking on the wrong side of every single thing. I mean, it's not the worst thing I've ever heard a player saying. I could be happy anyway. I mean, you're trying to avoid the question, and only an angry man like Tuchel could take that the wrong way, to be honest. I certainly didn't take it the wrong way. And
right.
Generally, I'm the guy who takes it the wrong way.
Yes, you are.
I think Tuchel's been a little harsh. I think it tells you more about Tuchel that, never mind Timo Werner, I think there's a lot of them there that are upsetting him.
Should we talk about the other angry quote that we heard from Thomas Tuchel?
This
was after losing against Arsenal by 4-0 in pre-season. The Chelsea coach not happy and coming out and saying we were simply not competitive. The worrying part is that the level of commitment physically and mentally for this match was far higher for Arsenal than for us. It was surely not our strongest lineup. This is a part of an explanation, but only a little part. I cannot guarantee we'll be ready in 2 weeks. Mark, the boys, quite rightly, over the last couple of days have said basically, well, isn't it your job to have everyone ready?
Well, that's it. I mean, a coach can complain about the attitude of his team, but that ultimately boils down to him. You know, that's his job to get the team ready. Now, Tuchel had other complaints about the lack of, you know, quality players that he's added to his squad. That isn't his fault. That's more the people above him. And his frustrations there are rooted maybe in 6 months, because Chelsea have been, you know, in paralysis for 6 months because the situation with the takeover, with Abramovich. Todd Bowley's now taken over. But I don't think what they've done so far with Raheem Sterling and Koulibaly, it's actually improved Chelsea. It's just replaced what they've lost. You know, they've lost the car. They've lost Rudiger, they've lost Christensen, so they're no better off than they were last season. So that, I can understand his unhappiness, and he's complaining about the players he's got left, people like Werner, who he's saying that the goal scoring situation hasn't changed because the same players as last year. You know, he inherited Werner, and I can see his problem there, but if you're complaining about the attitude of your players as the coach, that's your fault, and he's actually pointing a finger at himself. So I think Tuchel's got to be careful. I mean, if this kind of attitude, these outbursts were happening the old regime under Abramovich, then you could probably say that his time's numbered. We don't know what Todd Bowley will be like as an owner, but I think the way that Tuchel's talking right now, it's a dangerous game, because if you start the season poorly, Everton away, first game of the season, that's a tough one, you know, you're putting yourself into a difficult position, and he's not helping himself at all. But, you know, he's a guy that's got a bit of a temper. We've seen that in his previous jobs, and he does create friction at times with people above him and below him. So this could be the beginning of the end for Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea, because often when you criticise the players and the board, there's only one way back for that, and that's out the exit door.
Chelsea in trouble, Nikki?
It's still early for me to say on that. I think people often get swept up too much in results in pre-season. I think the results on the pitch can be misleading, but it's not good signs. It's certainly not a good sign if your manager is sort of in this open conflict with a player this close to the start of the season, and it's certainly not encouraging that those remarks after the game against Arsenal, that that's where he thinks his team is. That's sort of more significant to me than the result itself. So I wouldn't go overboard with it, but I think there's a little bit of a red flag up there for sure.
You'd have to be worried, Dan, because nobody, no player and no team likes the manager to criticise him in the press. But we understand that certainly during the season, when things are not going well and the team's not good, you can understand sometimes if a manager does that.
Right.
But when your manager is coming out in pre-season, because basically pre-season is a get out for any coach to turn round and say, it's pre-season.
Yeah, calm down.
Calm down. But then when you shut the door and you get in the dressing room, then you start pointing the finger and telling some home truths about commitment and attitude. You don't do that in the papers pre-season. That tells you that there's a problem with Tuchel.
Alessandro, is it just a case that it is pre-season and once the season starts properly for Chelsea, they'll switch the switch and they'll be fine?
Well, we need to consider that last year for Chelsea was a very difficult and unusual year, you know, after what everything happened, you know, between the ownership and the change of the ownership. So that is affecting, of course, from my point of view, this pre-season as well. And the problem that came out, because when you win, two seasons ago, everything was perfect. Everybody were great, amazing. Now, when you start losing some pieces, some games, and some trophies, you can really see what's going on, for real. So, I think Tuchel has a lot of work to do. I agree that this isn't not the best way to talk in front of the press, even if your team is, you know, make a disaster appearances. But, you know, they have all the potential, all the players and the staff, everything to perform very well at the start of the season. So they need to work hard in the next 2 weeks. So that's the thing. And I think they're going to be okay. I don't think they're going to have some problem after this loss.
Alessandro, you played under some interesting managers. Did anyone in pre-season ever kind of get this stressed about everything?
Definitely Conte was a tough one in the pre-season, Conte and Capello, both of them. For them, there's no friendly game. There's no friendly game. So even the first easy game, you know, that you have as a friendly, you know, you need to win, you need to perform very well, you need to be concentrated 100%. This is one way. Then I have different coaches, for example, Lippi, that was a little bit different, you know. He considered what's going on during the preseason, how much you work in order to get in shape. And sometimes can happen that you have some problem. So you consider the full pictures. But, you know, Conte and Capello, the stronger one in the preseason for the attitude that you need to put on the field.
Alessandro, Stevie is talking about Tuchel being an angry man. Who was the most angry when they were at their angriest, Capello or Conte?
Well, let me tell you this. It's funny because Capello became angry most of the time and during the halftime when we were winning 3-4-0. So we performed an amazing game in Siena. We're winning 3-0 easily and two crossbar, you know, amazing football. We came back in the locker room, no, not with a big smile, not even talk too much, but he was worried about what's going to happen in the second half, the lack of concentration. So he starts screaming all of a sudden. Oh, you have to do this. You have to do that. You need to do this. Oh, be careful. And then we look at each other and say, what's going on? Are we winning 3-0 or are we losing 3-0? So it's an interesting way to make understand the team where we are. Yeah, you perform well, but you need to still perform well in the second half in order to do not destroy everything that you did. This is a clear example that stays in my mind for ages, still now.
I'd start crying. We'd start shouting. I would not take it well. Thank you very much, guys. Just a reminder, if you ever miss a show, you can download our daily podcast, which is available over on the website.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
All these games on ESPN Plus. Also on ESPN Plus, it's Orlando City against the Red Bulls and Sacramento Republic against Sporting KC in the US Open Cup. Steve, of course, won the US Open Cup. Proudest moment of your career.
How did you know that?
You told me that, Stevie, many times. Not a day gone by I mentioned your US Open Cup and your success. Who did you beat in the final?
Dallas.
Oh, I was hoping you didn't remember.
Dallas.
Oh, wow. What's that?
Hard whip.
Stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Stevie Nicol with us, Alessandro Del Piero is with us as well. Despite being one of the greatest footballers ever, for some reason he hasn't paid for extra internet. So we've got to go through this quickly before it cuts out. For Del Piero, do you think that Roma can finish comfortably in the top four? Can the Dybala signing be compared to that of Batistuta in 2000 that helped them win the Scudetto?
Yes. Because the team is ready, because they have a great enthusiasm around, and because I think it's time that Roma shine again.
What would you do, Stevie, if a club like Barcelona was spending millions on new players and yet hadn't paid the outstanding salary to you?
Not happy at
all. It's, of course, the De Jong situation, isn't it, at the moment, from what we're hearing?
Look, I guess it depends on the situation. If we're talking 80s, early 90s, where you need your wages, then no, you're off.
Yeah.
But the fact is, you're dealing with players who probably the majority of them have maybe 15 to 20 million in the bank. It's a completely different ball game. And the likes of De Jong has been told that he's going to get repaid. So if I've got 15 million in the bank and I'm being told I'm going to get repaid,
right,
then I probably would be okay, considering it's Barcelona.
Alessandro, how would you feel if you were De Jong at the moment?
Weird.
Yeah.
I don't have another word better than this, because it's a very weird situation for him, for Barcelona, for anything that started 2 years ago when he came to Barcelona.
For Del Piero, which of these three players would you like most as your strike partner if you play today? Wow. Okay. Haaland, Mbappe, or Vlahovic?
Oh, my God. Okay. Vlahovic, because, you know, he played with Juve. So,
yes.
Thinking me coming back, of course, have to be Juve. And it's very tough, this question. They're very tough. For sure, Mbappe is more mature, he won a lot of trophy, he's stable on this national team, he's shining, he's probably the best player now on the pitch. But potentially, I love Haaland. Mm. I love him. I mean, the attitude, the generosity on the pitch, and I still remember many goals that scored his teammates, he was celebrating like he was scoring the goal. And that's I think one of the best things that I ever seen, including of course his qualities and his potential.
African, Stevie. Start bench or drop? Samuel Eto'o, Didier Drogba, Mo Salah.
Oh my goodness.
Also, when's our next haircut appointment? This is from Stevie's barber. I think it's a year ago since you had that done, Steve.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. You better remember it because you'll never. Oh my goodness. Wow. I'm going to have to say that it would either, my first choice would either be Samuel Eto'o or Didier Drogba, because Salah's about goal scoring.
Right.
I know the game's about goals, but the other two scored enough goals that I wouldn't put them ahead of Salah because they do other things.
Right.
For the team as well. You know, Salah's kind of the focal point for the team to put the ball in the net, whereas the other two did so many other things and scored bagfuls of goals. So, unfortunately, I'm going to be harsh on Salah and I'm going to have to try and pick between Eto'o and Drogba. I like a bit of pace.
Right.
So I think the pace of Samuel Eto'o is going to just push Drogba aside. I'll go Samuel Eto'o first.
Right.
Drogba second and Mr. Mo Salah.
Alessandro?
I mean, thinking the previous question, which one you want to play with, for sure, as a striker, Drogba, as a number nine, Drogba was definitely the best of the three. The other two are, in my opinion, two wings. So I think Drogba represented the perfect striker. Right, left, head, strong, fast, everything.
For Alessandro Del Piero, it's the 90th minute in the World Cup final. It's 1-1. There's a free kick just outside the penalty box. Who's taking that free kick if you had to choose between Pirlo, Zola, Baggio, or Del Piero?
Of course, myself.
Yeah.
Of course, myself, but for many reasons, but it's unfair questions, by the way. I mean, this one, the one before, it's unfair question. We are talking about amazing players that can deliver crazy, and the cold blood about Pirlo, it's unbelievable from my point of view, but the what Baggio did in his career was absolutely amazing for me. I had the pleasure to play two seasons with him, and I play with Zola, my first team in the national team, so it's, I play with three of them. Why can I choose one of them? So yeah, myself.
Who was the second best free kick taker below yourself that you ever saw? Take those names out, like that you ever saw.
Well, I'm telling you two free kickers that I love because they did something incredible from very far away, like Mihajlovic and Juninho, Pernambucano. Yes.
Yeah.
These two guys were absolutely outstanding.
How many more free kicks do you think you would have scored if there was the magic spray back in your day, the 10 yards? You would have, so many more.
Yes. Yes, I believe not only myself, but everybody, you know, because that thing was a real challenge for everybody. And especially in Italy, we try to bring some meters and some yards, so you were shooting, you know, very far away. And
yeah,
the ball were a little bit different as well. So, yeah, I would love to play in this time, but I can't, so...
No, that's all right. You get to talk to us instead. Because you've got heavier balls, the ball moving closer to you.
I wouldn't know anything about it.
No.
I was usually in the wall.
Yeah. Alessandro, I'm not sure if you've seen this, but just going back to Dybala, the reception he got from the Roma fans today was extraordinary.
Well, there's a lot of excitement about what happened at Roma last year and what Mourinho built. Okay, so already that one. And the final months, you know, with that win of the cup is something priceless for them. Including this move, you know, from Juventus, that is always a big rivalry between the teams. And so, and Roma loves player like Dybala, loves player that, you know, can do crazy things with their feet and with the ball and make maybe some free kick, you know. They have already one that is really good, that is Pellegrini. It's incredible free kick players and incredible player from my point of view. So I love see Paolo in that way, because to be honest, the last years at Juve was troubling for him for many reasons, and he didn't show that happiness that he used to show to the people. And this crowd,
we're seeing here, I know, it's incredible. And all of this really has come, hasn't it, Alessandro, is it fair to say, from Jose Mourinho joining the club and just bringing this incredible spirit to the team?
He moved definitely the club in a different level, upper level, in terms of mentality. And this is what Roma needed in that time. And I think now they are very strong in many ways.
Imagine that, Dybala sat there thinking, all these people have come because of me.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
I don't think he was expecting that. He's sitting there like, is there somebody behind me?
What's going on? Alessandro, do you think Juventus will regret letting him go?
Well, the story of the last years, 3 years actually, with Dybala was difficult. Difficult for both sides from my point of view. And the result on the pitch wasn't what they want, both of them. And they find an agreement. And I think I see this as a loss for both of them, okay? Because I truly believe that Dybala was perfectly fit in Juventus, even now. But this is what happened. And to be honest, now Juve has a strong team, and Dybala has an amazing receiver at Roma, and he's going to give back a lot of goals for that team, I believe so.
Ah, we did it, thank goodness. Oh, there it is again, there it is.
That is something.
I was celebrating the fact that Alessandro's internet survived extra time. Alessandro will say thank you very much as Dybala looks on, very happy and proud. You can have a nice cup of tea now, nice that silver teapot behind you, Alessandro. That's lovely, isn't it? Make yourself a nice cup of tea, ready to go. Start the rest
it's
of the
a good
evening.
Timing. Thank you.
ESPN SC back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us. More reaction to those incredible scenes that we saw in Rome.